that supporting. In the UK, it's basically a list in law of things that you can do. The difference with the US system of fair use is that fair use in the US is based on four broad rules of what will constitute fair use, and they look at each thing separately according to those four factors. In the UK, it's different. We've got a great big little list. Here's the list from the Act. Fair dealing, and there's also permitted acts. They're kind of classified as two different things, but they basically mean an exclusion. And there are three main heads of fair dealing in UK law. That's private study and research, that's number one. News reporting and commentary, that's number two. Reporting current events, so that newspapers can, for instance, quote things from books to say what Salman Rushdie, what he had written that was really bad, things like that. But for the reporting current events, you're not allowed to use photos and say that that's fair use, because that's not recognising the value that the photo has in your reporting news. So that doesn't fall into that. So you've got those three main heads: private study and research. You see, I do know this from the top of my head, that's why I've got a list here. Reporting current events and criticism or kind of review. And they're not blanket kind of exceptions that if you fall into that, that's it, it's fair use. In each case, you have to look at whether it's fair use. It's whether it's not commercial, and the kind of extent to which you borrow from someone's photograph or what. You can't kind of reprint a whole book and say that you're putting one little comment on it and therefore it's kind of criticism and then therefore falls under fair use. So you, in each case, you have to look at it with fresh eyes and think, is this fair use in this instance? Which in a way is a bit like the US system. So they don't have this great big list. They just have certain factors and they look at each and something. But the long and short of it is, it gives people a get out. If copyright owners say, this is my work, you're not allowed to do anything with it without my consent, but I am it. Mm. And so, well, if I'm just going to quote it in an essay that I'm doing, that's okay. You have to quote it and then give recognition to the author of the footnote or whatever, if it's practicable to do so. Or you can use it on the news and use a certain bit of it, but not a photograph. And then you've got this other great big list of things. It doesn't really fit in the fair dealing, but it's other things that you are allowed to do, notwithstanding the fact that something is a copyright work. So you've got uses for education, for libraries, for public administration, computer programs, that would be. You can make a backup copy, you can make a temporary copy for caching purposes on the internet. You can make one copy of a program that you buy, so you have a backup copy of that. You can use copyright works in an incidental way. So if we were making a film here at the Tuttle Club and we happen to catch one of these pieces of art in the film, the owner of the artwork couldn't say, you've copied my copyright work, it's an infringement. We could say, no, it's incidental use. So it's just a way of stopping people from suing you left, right and centre. If they have their copyright works peppered all around the world, at some point you're going to trip over it. So if it's not for commercial use, it's fair, then generally it might fall under fair use. Is that qualified enough? So that's the introduction, and I'll be testing you to see if you've memorised all of it at the end.
And your selection of documents. Mm-hmm. So the three that you sort of selected when the topic was going to be fair use, made you choose these three documents, and what do they illustrate for you in terms of fair use?
I think they show that it's an area that's in transition constantly, also that there's a lot of misunderstanding about fair use, and that fair use is a double-edged sword and can be something used in an unfair way. Fair use is often cited by people who just want the right to use other people's copyright works without bothering about their rights. And they just think, fair use. Why? Because it's me, because it's fair, because I want it. And and it's, you know, striking a... So just to go through them one by one, I'll start off with this music film format shifting to be legalised but may not circumvent DRM. Well, the government were looking at UK copyright law after there was a big, you know, report done on it by Anthony Gowers, who was the ex editor of the Financial Times, I think, and like Gordon Brown said, right, have a look at our intellectual property laws and see if it's fit for purpose in the digital age. So Gowers looked at it all and did lots of consultation, and one of the things that they found is that, well, like, copyright is a very old law, and it, in lots of ways, it doesn't really fit with the digital age, where copying is just incidental and rife in pretty much everything that we do, because you have to make copies on the web and certain uses, and the way that we live involves copying of copyright works in the natural use of those works. So you buy a track on iTunes, what do? You put it on your iTunes player. You don't want to just have that there all the time, so you put it on your phone as well. Then you burn a CD for the car. Well, technically that's an infringement of the copyright, because you're copying it. Your format shifting it. I mean, that's an area where the law says it's an infringement technically. And so one of the things that the Gowers and the government looked at was, well, that doesn't make sense, does it? Because it's not a cynical use of the copyright. We don't want people to be able to be sued for that. So let's look into making format shifting legal. So they did it and went into the consultation of it. But in the end, they pulled it. So it's not legal now, still. Because the reason why was because they thought that it wouldn't be right to just introduce that on a UK level.
Was it in college?
No.
No. Oh, okay. Sorry.
And that these things should be dealt with on an EC level, because generally IP law, they're trying to harmonise on the EC level, so we all have the same law, which makes sense with the transnational nature of the web and IP rights anyway. Mm. I mean, there's not much point having this right in the UK only and making our system different from within the rest of Europe, and there's so much movement of traffic and stuff. So they kicked it into the long grass and said, this is better dealt with at the European level, let's wait for them to do it. So there was a big push saying, let's legalise format shifting because it doesn't fit in with the law. The law doesn't work anymore in the modern age, and this is a great example of that. So let's change this, and then I'm going, oh, no, let's not. Far too complicated.
So it's still illegal to format shift?
It's still, yeah. Well, it's unlawful. Mm. Illegal sort of hints at it being a criminal. And this is a very, very, very kind of significant thing to bear in mind in all of this.
Yeah,
it's a civil infringement to infringe copyright. You're not going to have the police knocking on your door. It just means that the copyright owner has the right to sue you for damages caused by that kind of infringement. And if there's no damages, what are they going to sue you for? So if I take a photo of that copyright work and make a big poster for my flat, that's an infringement. And they could say, well, I'm going to sue you for that because I would have charged you £100 for a print of my photo. But if I just take a print of something for this, we've kind of copied these pages, it's okay. You might say it's fair use because this is private study research, but it's not private. We're all here in public talking about this. And, but what if, say, that didn't fall within fair use? They'd say it's copyright infringement, rah, and we all go, no, that's not fair. But there's no point in caring, because they're not going to sue us, we're not making any money. They might have said, well, we would charge you a licence fee for that. We'd say, well, what would be a reasonable licence fee? 20 quid, 50 quid? And they're not going to spend £10,000 suing you, taking it all through the courts, just to get back their 50 quid. So, practically, that is the biggest thing that's going to stop people from suing you for copyright. And moving on to this, if this guy, what a wonderful name, Shepherd Fairey, his parents, real nice people. if he'd made this postcard and it had sold, or he'd just kind of printed it, you know, 20 times and it had been big in one village for one day and that had been it, not made an impact, then there'd be no point in chasing after him. What a waste of everyone's time to say it's technically copyright in infringement. So we'll sue you out of principle. We'll spend £10,000 on lawyers, or £5,000, or whatever it would cost them. In the States, it would cost an absolute packet. So it's only worth going after people if they're making money, because then you can claim damages from it, and that gives you a reason to use your copyright and to like assert it. So that's worth bearing in mind as well. So with this one, moving on to this article, this artist, Shepherd Fairey, found a picture of Barack Obama on the internet, a photograph, and kind of modulated it so it was in certain colours. It's in red and blue and white, isn't it? And it became a really iconic image for the whole kind of presidential race and the election thing. And it was distributed all over the place, and people made other versions of it. And it became a really big image that captured the mind of the public. And he would have made quite a lot of money from it. And so that gives people the reason to think, well, if this guy's making a lot of money from it, or a lot of attention, which you can, you know, equate with kind of money as well, because if it boosts his kind of career as an artist, that's got a monetary value in a way. So they worked out who actually owned this image. People were like, well, where does this image come from? Like, where does it come from? And they tracked it down through using, you know, forensic means to, like you do, you know, musicologists can work out based on like a kind of by looking at the actual waveform whether something's been kind of stolen or sampled from a certain source or not. So they did the same thing with this.
So it's the image of Obama that the article's about rather than the style of the poster or the parody of it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Because where does this fit in with kind of potentially, I know what you've just been saying about the technical side of it, with prior art, because he hasn't just taken a photo and reproduced the photo.
He has, yeah.
No, he hasn't, because he's artistically changed it.
Yeah, he's adapted it. So you could possibly argue that that photo is one of many, because if he's giving a lecture or a talk somewhere, many people could be taking that same photo. People could be filming it. So he's then using his memory just to reproduce it, because it's not actually the photo. He's actually created a work of art, arguably from a photo, but it could be from multiple other sources.
Well, all you've got to prove is something is more likely than not to succeed in a court claim. It's on the balance of, you know, you don't have to prove it's beyond reasonable doubt. You just have to prove it's more likely than not that he stole that from somebody. Well, didn't steal it, but used somebody else's copyright work. So that's when the guys come, you know, forensic guys, and they're like, yes, we can prove that this photo is the photo taken by Manny Garcia, who was working for the National Press Club or whatever. So he was, so they would own the photo because this Manny Garcia guy was employed by them at the time. So on the basis of that, they can go to court saying, well, he can argue, well, no, I took it from someone else. You can't prove it's your photo. But on the basis of, you know, forensic people saying it is taken from that photo, they can think, right, we'll invest in this. And the interesting thing about that with this case is that like Shepherd Fairey made a big deal about saying, no, you can't stop me from using this image that he'd got from Google. You can't stop me. It's fair use, blah, blah, blah. It's for my art. It's for, you know, current sort of news reporting-y type thing. It's to help, you know, politics. And it doesn't really fit into any fair use category, really, if you think about it. He said he didn't make much money from it. All that he made was ploughed back into his art. Well, big deal. All I make is plowed back into my life as well, you know. I don't sit on a big pile of money at home. And interestingly, they started talking with the lawyers on either side. His lawyers were saying it's fair use, and he was saying, well, no, it's not money. And they started to talk about a settlement figure. So they would share the profits that he was making out of this with the people who were taking the photos from. But then he dug his heels in and said, well, no, I'm going to go to court for a declaration that this is fair use. I'm not going to settle. And then it turned out that he'd been, you know, destroying evidence of where he'd got the photo from and deceiving the court. And his lawyers all walked away from him and touched him with a barge pole. And a judge earlier this year said to him, look, Mr. Fairey, really, you should be thinking about settling this. And also, the kind of irony is that Shepherd Fairey, big, given it the big fair use, come on, freedom to use images. He has sued quite a few people for using and adapting his images in their work. So, you know, it's an example, I think, of someone being a bit cynical and thinking that they are the centre of the universe, and because it's them, they can use whatever they want, and it must be fair use because it's me, and I'm Shepherd Fairey, the big artist. And I think, why shouldn't he share the profits of that? He's making money, why shouldn't he share the profits? Not give them all away, but share the profits with the people.
But there's a distinction here as well, isn't there? The distinction between, is it creatively wrong to appropriate images?
It's legally wrong.
But this is the distinction. It's like, that because money is involved, and we all need money to, you know, to live. My point is that many people might argue that it's actually creatively wrong as well, just to use other people's images.
It's sampling, isn't it?
But I mean, I would disagree with that. I think, you know, because really this is the way that art has sort of progressed through the canon of history, that other people kind of respond to, react to other visual ideas that they see out there, and you can follow that all the way up through art history. People, you know, making references to artists that have come before them, you know, in terms of painting, painters who have used photography, Warhol, Blake, they're all using imagery in terms of sort of responding to the culture.
I think that's, you know, reflected in the fact that there's no copyright in an idea. And so you can't sue someone for saying, well, I wrote a 12-bar blues song, and you've just done a 12-bar blues song, and, well, it's just an idea. I've written a story about, you know, Jesus actually being married, and the whole, you know, that whole Dan Brown stuff. And then other people say, well, we wrote that as well, we had the same idea, and you borrowed our idea, so we're going to sue you. Well, it's an idea. There's no copyright in the idea. It's the, all that you have copyright in is the fixation of the idea. So a copyright work has to be fixed in a written article, or a piece of music, you know, a recording or a composition, on paper, or a painting. It's not something in your head, and everyone's free to go and do their own thing. It's copying that's the problem. I mean, you can also have a piece of music made here, and somebody in Australia might make exactly the same piece. And I can say, well, that's an identical copy of my work. But if I've never played my work to anybody, and he's just come up with exactly the same, just because he happens to have done, then my work's obviously not all that original.
You could argue that although this work is derived from the photo of Obama, it's not the photo of Obama that was taken originally. It has been processed, it has been...
It's an adaptation, which falls within the copyright, within, you know, restricted acts that the copyright owner has exclusivity over. It's the right to make an adaptation of the work. I mean, I think with this, a common sense view, I think about, you know, music. I mean, I run a record label, did do for lots of years before the law, and everyone samples other people's music, and the people send me tracks based around a sample completely. They've sampled some work, put a beat on it, played on it, and there we go. It's quite lazy, but it's just what we do. It's just normal. And the thing is, you can run a certain amount with that sample track. You can release it on vinyl, sell it 1,000 copies. But when you get Ministry of Sound like coming to you saying, we want to license it to sell 100,000 CDs, you think, it's too risky, because I know there's a sample on there, I'm borrowing their work, it's an infringement of their copyright. And if it gets to that level, why didn't he just think, I'll have my own picture of, you know, Barack Obama drawn, I'll get an artist to draw a picture and make it my own work, so then I am free to go and sell it.
What
and
if
use
you never
it.
Have access to Barack Obama in order to photograph him, and yet you still have, you know, a message to convey about, you know, about that subject.
But again, which is why...
I mean, sometimes you have to use other people's sources.
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about here is using them legitimately. You know, if you need to use a picture of Barack Obama, that you should buy that, or buy the license to use it.
Well, you take a license from somebody. I mean, it's really quite simple. This guy didn't need to use that picture of him. Mm. If he wanted to use that and run and make a lot of money with it, then he should have gone to them and said, can I have a license for your photo? And they would have worked out a kind of profit sharing arrangement. Or he could have gone to somebody else.
I was going to say, did he realise it was going to be such a huge thing? I mean, if it's just a poster that you create for your studio and your mates, but if it gets picked up and run with, how, you know, he's obviously egoed with it.
So I think the person we have to blame is obviously Google. If you hadn't found it on Google, then we wouldn't have had this issue. Because if it was like a completely orchestrated photo where he'd gone in and he'd kind of been sat down.
Would this have happened before the internet?
Yeah, that wouldn't have been on Google. If it was like a proper press picture that was being done.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that we've shifted into a different arena, and that is the real-time delivery and the journalistic intent of delivering a piece of content has actually eroded away because of somebody wanting to be first, somebody wanting to capture that picture of the plane in the Hudson River, you know, and then there's this massive shift with the newspapers thinking, oh my God, all our journalists are no longer as fast and as efficient because some guy has just took a photo. And I think you can apply that to this. I think if that guy had too much time to think about making this post, that somebody else would have done something quicker before him, made a noise about it. I actually agree with all the points around it, but I think it comes down to ego and ownership. You know, people want to own that experience. You know, AP jumping all over this and say it was our photographer, it was our photo, you know, we should be getting some kudos. It's, for me, as soon as you put digital assets on the internet, they're gone. That your copyright's gone.
I don't think that can be right, Phil, because online, the online world, for instance, of kind of music, is your only marketplace anymore. Now, it's fundamental. The fundamental point here is: do you want people to invest their time and effort in making kind of creative works? Do you want people to say, "I'm a photographer. I'm really good. I'm going to go out and get great pictures. I'm a musician. I'm going to sit and make an amazing track."
Yeah.
They're not going to do that if there's no protection.
Okay.
If someone takes a picture and everyone's free to steal it.
Okay.
And that's where we're at.
Okay.
But then the little man can't make his money from playing music, from being an artist, and what I'm worried about in all of these articles is that people always tend to look at the big players like the news agency or the independent and say they're the baddies, whereas if you were to flip it and say there's a small freelance, you know, photographer who's taking this picture and people are using it without consent, we'd all go, "Oh, that's not fair, he should be paid for that." And
but that's in a cultural thing for me. That's not.
You can copy very easily.
It probably comes on to your last article, isn't it? Which is kind of flipped. The Obama one is the big agency going, "This was my photo," whereas your last article is a big agency using someone else's photo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is this one here?
Just before, can I just say that this could it not? I mean, we sort of worked out that he obviously didn't know it was going to be a big hit, but at the point, it's a bit like you were saying, if you sample some music and then suddenly Ministry of Sound wants to do something with it, if you suddenly realise it's getting big or it could get big, that's the time when you kind of step back and can say, okay, I'm going to go and talk to the original owner of that and do a deal.
Yeah.
Then you can make it legal before you go big.
Well,
when you realise it's going big,
you don't always get that point to make the decision.
Well, I think you do, though, with this use, because... Sorry, I'll just say this and I'll shut up for a sec. But with this poster, if, say, poster people wanted to, you know, sell this, they would have to go to Shepherd Fairey and say, "Can we have a license to reproduce your artwork of the Hope picture?" And then he would grant them that license for a fee. And so that's the point at which you think, it's like the Ministry of Sound license. I've got to be careful here. I'm making money with somebody else's work. And the irony, as I said with this guy, is that he sued other people for using for making mock-ups of this picture, saying, "You're stealing my idea and my work." So, come on, mate, you know, you can't have it both ways. He considered it to be his work enough to stop other people copying it. So he should, you know, respect that someone else's photograph that he's using. And it's very easy, if not, it's like the track with the sample in it. If you really want to sell it to Ministry of Sound, get some musicians in to replay it or to do something similar and pay them so you own that, and then you can run off and sell it. But rather than borrowing other people's work and then, you know, claiming it as your own. Because as soon as you start making money out of something, it's not fair use then.
Yeah. Okay. As I was saying, we're actually in a similar position. I wanted to use a particular image and it was something I found on DeviantArt. Couldn't contact the guy no matter what you wanted. Yeah, you just tried, you were somewhere in Japan. And in the end, it's like, do we run with that image? Because it's perfect for us. But in the end, we just use it as inspired Japanese manga thing, and we just went with that because it's just too dangerous. You think, if you just even, and because you're aware of copyright, we all are, and I just think it's too, if you want it for your company, I just think it's too dangerous to run with it because you want any credibility down the line. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, ours is inspired by that.
The flip side of that is if you're going to, you know, approach him anyway, and pay him a fee for that use, a fair fee, the license to use his image, then you can't find him. You can take the judgment that, well, we'll use it anyway, we'll keep what we consider to be a fair fee by kind of industry standard rates in a bank account. So when he contacts us, if ever, we can say, oh yeah, we did try to find you, here's a fee for you. And
we go back to what you can do if someone does infringe your copyright. You can sue them for damages. So he's not going to be able to sue you for more than a fair fee anyway.
But I get all that fair fee, and I think it's correct. And, you know, my concern is, though, I've been watching the font foundries online, which are big foundries of online fonts. They sort of have lots of libraries for individual fonts. And it used to be that you had to have a license for fonts. You'd pay the foundry a certain amount of money to use that font on your machine and use it in your literature. Now, there's been a massive shift in the last 3 months at making those online, so you can download these web fonts and have fair use of those on your machine. So you can download 50 fonts to your machine.
Yeah.
That has never happened before. And I think that there is a massive change going on in the delivery of stuff based on the economic climate, because these guys still need to make money, and they're finding out that people are actually feeding back into them, that they need those fonts on their machine to be able to make the mock-ups.
Yeah.
You know, that's never happened before. Yeah. So would you agree that, yes, people need to have fair use, but the economy and the economics of the world sort of are slowly eroding it, because people want that sort of value and they're willing to pay little bits of money to be able to get to it? There's something rapidly changing.
It's a kind of freemium model, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
You're saying, look, you can have the intro for free, but if you want to commercialise it or have the extra add-ons, then you have to pay. So you lure people
in by
giving them.
But the fonts are on your machine. Once you've downloaded them, they're not encrypted or anything like that. You've got them. You could just do what you want with them, or they can be spread and pirated around. That's never happened before.
But could you then, if you're a designer, could you make a big brochure for a company using those fonts and sell it to?
Well, this is the woolly area.
Yeah. And how do you know? How do you know it's a? Because if you get a font onto your machine, or someone sends you a font, you just kind of put it on. If you then use it, and then someone goes, "Oh, that was my font," it's quite strange, because before it's just like there's 5 fonts on the internet, and we use those 5 fonts, but now you can use more, especially if you embed them into a web page, because you have a copy of the font on the server so that it can call it, can't you? So you don't have to have the font on your machine anymore. But if you download it, do you then have, can you use it for publication?
Digital makes this a lot more tougher, doesn't it? Because there's a lot more things that you've got to try and verify. You've got to verify the source, where it came from. Is it in a country that has these copyright laws? Mm. You know, I met William Wollard in my friend's kitchen 2 months ago. He used to be on Tomorrow's World. He's got 14 years of footage, but it's about his voice, not necessarily the video. And he's all over Australian TV, and nobody's paid him a license fee. As soon as his content entered the digital domain, he lost control of it. You know, his big media company in America said, yeah, we should sell this and distribute it and make, you know, and it just got leaked. And he's got no way of getting paid for that content.
If it were broadcast on a TV show,
network,
then that's somebody who you can fix on and think, right, I can sue you, I know you're good for the money. The problem is when you have 1,000 people using a bit, none of whom have much money, they're not worth suing any of us in this room, because we haven't got massive houses or great big bank accounts, probably.
You've got a hand.
And it's not worth going after the likes of us. But when you get BMWs or Mercedes or Boots, you know they're good for the money. If they're using your copyright work without your consent, it is worth suing, because they will settle, or if they don't settle and they lose, they've got enough to pay you and your costs. So that's when copyright makes sense. In the internet age, where it's so kind of disparate, where everyone turns into a fragment of the whole rather than being the whole, it's very, very difficult. It doesn't really work. What I always think, I always get to the point of thinking, especially with kind of music works, but with all copyright works it makes sense. The only way it can work is by having a system of micro payments where every time you play a song off your iPod, on your computer, on anything, you pay 0.0005p. Every time anybody plays that song, they pay it. You're not going to think about, oh, should I play it? Oh, it's 0.0005p. Oh, no, I'll save me money. You just think, yeah, whatever. I'll do whatever I want. You don't have to own it. You don't have to pay to have a copy of it. You're like 79p on iTunes. But every time anyone plays it, they're paying a little bit of money.
And then
copyright can completely disappear because everyone will want their works to be copied as much as possible. So as soon as someone presses play, they're paying. And it's a system of micropayments that would